Welcome in, time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Welcome in, time for Daily Editorial. It is Monday, the 6th of March. Very interesting weekend for Big Al. I did some studying on Tulsi Gabbard, which we're not going to talk about right now. But I also did a little bit of chatting with Jimmy off mic about the Republicans' chance in 24. Jim, let's talk about, number one, who the strength in the Republican Party is right now. It's got to be, number one, certainly Trump, DeSantis, and I suppose to an extent Nikki Haley. But Nikki Haley, I don't think, is going to carry the torch. Why don't you give your opinion, if you would, about each one of those people and any dark horse that you might see coming into the race?
Sure, Al. I think we ought to look at what happened over this last week, you know, last weekend with CPAC, the conservative political action committee. They had a big conference. One of the keynote speakers was Donald Trump. You had Tulsi Gabbard speak. You had, you know, quite a few people speak there that were, you know, kind of vying for position. Carrie Lake spoke. When they do polling, they did straw polling. It's interesting because, you know, there was a lot of political attacks on Trump right after the 2022 election. Most of the mainstream media said he's done, he's over. And if you remember, I said, no, don't count him out. It's very early in the process. And oh, by the way, these are, you know, a lot of mainstream Republicans, rhinos, if you will, or people that just don't want to compete with him or don't want him in the system, that actually have been working against his, you know, his moves in,
right,
in the executive office for the last 6 years. So what we see in polling right now, and in the course of the CPAC straw poll, and that's, you know, this is the core, this is the base for the Republican, you know, party and the conservatives, 40-point advantage over DeSantis. 40-point advantage.
Yeah, I saw 30, but 40, even 30 is almost unbeatable at this point.
Well, for the and it's, again, it's early in the race. DeSantis has not made any, you know, he's not said he's going to run for president. He is out talking about a new book he wrote. He was actually in California slamming Gavin Newsom this week.
Yeah.
And he's been going around talking about issues and being a very, I would say, a positive voice for conservatives, but he has not attacked Trump. Trump has made some statements that the media spun to look like they were attacking DeSantis. They were pretty benign, but the way the media spun them, that made it look very much like an attack. And of course, Trump, you know, says, hey, look, I've got some, you know, there's some stuff on DeSantis. And bottom line is, I think it will be interesting to see. I do not believe, I think DeSantis is a very smart politician.
You bet.
I do not believe that he will go into the race if he doesn't have equal to or greater polling numbers than Donald Trump. And of course, he won't go into it too late. There's probably a large number of very influential donors that don't want Trump in the Republican Party. That, or I should say, supporters of, I won't even call it the Republican Party, I'll call it the Uniparty in D.C.
Yeah.
And they'll go after DeSantis to try to get him to throw Trump out. But I think DeSantis is far too smart if Trump keeps the type of numbers that he has right now. And of course, in many polls, and this is, these are left-wing polls too, Trump beats out Biden in a head-to-head race as things stand now. All things can change. It's early on it. But what you see from CPAC is a very powerful Trump. And what you saw come out from the East Palestine visit last week, where Trump went out and brought water and grabbed the spotlight before the Biden administration was able to do anything effectively. And it's just been a disaster for them over and over again, certainly for Pete Buttigieg. You don't see much action there. So I think Trump far and away has the lead. And I think he's going to be tough to beat. because there's far, as I've said from the beginning, there are far too many committed MAGA or America First people that voted for him. And I'm not just talking about Republicans. I'm talking about independents and Democrats that have been, you know, forgotten by the powers of Washington.
Jimmy, has that number gotten large enough that it's now perhaps large enough that it can really win the election in 2040? Or 2040.
Yeah, I think the number was big enough when he got 10 million more votes than anybody else ever had.
Yeah,
with 76 million in 2020.
Right.
Because I really think that there's a lot of questions that need to be answered about how Joe Biden got 81 million votes. I just think there are a tremendous number of questions that need to be resolved before I'm going to accept that number as legitimate. Especially with COVID and the lockdowns and mail-in balloting and all the voter ID restrictions that were lax, and of course all the questions about what happened with Fox News calling Arizona early, and then of course East Coast ballot counting stopping when Trump was ahead 14% in Pennsylvania at midnight, voting stops and he comes back and loses it. That doesn't make any sense.
No.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. So ultimately, I don't trust, and as I think most people don't trust the system right now. That's according to polling as well. Most people think that there was definitely fraud there. And of course, Arizona, we have not gotten through the process fully with Arizona. And there's a possibility that that could actually break things wide open and people would see what corruption was there. At the same time, there are states that are pushing back on Zuckerbucks, the $419 million dollars he poured into the election.
Yeah.
Pushing back on no voter ID. They're pushing back on mail-in ballot boxes. Georgia, actually, I believe, just outlawed them. Some of the other Democratic states are continuing with that process. But ultimately, it seems to me that Trump had the numbers. And it's not so much – When you look at a primary race, it's not so much how many votes are going to get you to the general election to win. So let's don't even talk about that. Let's talk about how many people would not vote at all in a general election if Trump did not win. And that's what I say is the problem for the Republican Party. If Ron McDaniel and Mitch McConnell and Ken Griffin, these big, powerful, influential people that want Trump out, continue to push this agenda, they're going to crush the Republican Party. Now, what the Republican Party needs to do is actually embrace them, embrace these policies, and unify over America First and Make America Great Again type policies, which did very well from 2016 or 2017. 2021
until. Jimmy, I got to tell you, I think we are really in uncharted waters right now in terms of the electoral process in America. And I have to say that, let me give you a couple of opinions here. Most of the people that I talk with, interestingly enough, I talk a lot about politics, certainly with the folks here at Joelle. But I have to tell you, most of the people just kind of, when you talk about the results of the election, focusing on integrity, honesty, et cetera, most of the folks, and this is a very, very high demographic intellectually, I have to say, and most of these people are just kind of shrugging their shoulders and saying, I can't believe that election was dishonest. I just simply don't believe it. And I wonder if that philosophy isn't going to become paramount in people's thinking in 24.
Well, I think what's going to happen is you're going to have more opening of the books. People are going to continue to ask questions. There's going to be more information coming out. If you remember, most of the mainstream media, in fact, what most people there have been listening to, said absolutely there was no justification for any of these questions.
Uh-huh.
But that was a coordinated effort in order to protect a particular political party. Over time, you're seeing more and more information come out and more questions that remain unanswered. And of course, there has been quite a bit of fraud that's been identified from 2020 where people have been prosecuted in some cases. But again, it's very difficult when you throw away the ballots when, you know, after 24 months, because yeah. that's kind of the rule. There's a lot of challenges there. But again, what we're going to see is most people actually do agree, and this is according to many polls, that there were questions in 2020 and that there's a possibility of corruption.
Yeah.
Now, people living in certain media areas or people on the left are going to say, oh, no, quit complaining about not winning because that's the way it works.
Right.
But I know from being a ballot observer in the former Soviet Union in the Republic of Georgia for OSCE, the Organization of Security and Cooperation for Europe, that it's pretty easy to rig elections. And I watched it happen with Shevardnadze in Georgia back.
Yeah, I know you did.
Yeah. So when you don't have oversight, when you don't question it, and the media comes out and doesn't allow you to question it, and of course you have a continuing attack on anybody that questions it from not only the media but a Democratic run Department of Justice that is clearly biased,
yeah,
then you it actually creates more questions. And that's where I think people will be wondering and looking very carefully and closely
yeah.
at voter ID laws, about mail-in ballot measuring. And of course, you know, Washington State's a disaster with that. You know, you can, I told you, I got multiple ballots in the midterm yeah. election 2 years ago.
I know that, I know.
So a lot of these crazy things, you know, people have to be held accountable, and we've got to rebuild faith in the system. If not, you'll see a continued deterioration of faith and trust in America and our election system.
Well, I got to tell you, Jimmy, unless the situation with Biden in terms of the cognitive issues that they're talking about, unless he really, really messes up and proves to the country that he is not cognitively able to handle the office at the age of, what, 80, 81, what have you, unless something like that happens, my prediction is he'll take the election, because a lot of people are so fed up with everything that's going on, everything that you and I talk about almost on a daily basis, that I think they'll just throw their hands up in the air and they'll say, you know, let's wait and see what happens.
With Joe Biden? I mean, that's great. That's your opinion. I think that's absolutely not possible. First of all, I don't think he can go much longer because his mental capacity is diminishing on a daily basis.
Yeah.
The problems that have been created over the last 2 years, I don't think people are going to throw their hands up and say, forget it, let's just deteriorate farther. I think they're going to say, enough is enough. Enough is enough with the crime. Enough with border issues. Global wars, the inflation issues. I think people are just going to say, this is, I don't care who runs against him. And I really don't think that Joe Biden is favored right now, even within the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
They just don't know what to do. They do not know what to do right now with Joe Biden, because he is the incumbent. There's an advantage with that.
You bet there is.
And the media is still protecting him.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. There's no question about that. But one of the reasons I think I've come to the opinion is I think people really, number one, are not really focusing on how far America has slipped in terms of violence, in terms of lack of morals. And when we talk about lack of morals, let's forget the normal sexual situation. Let's talk, and that's just terrible in my opinion, but let's talk a little bit about fiscal responsibility, etc., etc. I think one thing that where people may swing their vote to the right is if it becomes very, very obvious, and it would have to be laid out so that a sixth grader could understand it, but if it becomes very, very obvious just how bad, what a negative situation the country is in from a fiscal standpoint, I think that could sway the election. I don't think there's nothing else that I can think of that would, unless going back to what I said a little while ago, unless it became so obvious that Biden, from a cognitive standpoint, could simply hurt the country more than anybody else?
Well, they have not shown any competence in any major catastrophe so far.
Right.
So that's not bringing people, you know, it's not making people feel good about what's happening. People are this, well over 70% of the nation right now believes that we're going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. So, you know, in the absolutely, the debt issues are just absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
The inflation issues have not been stopped yet. I mean, you know, oh, we're down to 6% inflation. Are you kidding me? That's year over year when you're going back to when it was at 9%.
Right.
So it's still 6% above the 9%. So in 2 years, you're talking a significant increase in inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the overhead that it takes to fund and resource these, you know, the immigrants that have, the illegal immigration that's come into this, you know, nearly 6 million people, or over, possibly over 6 million people in 2 years.
Yeah,
that's expensive. Look, there's nobody is going to be comfortable with just saying, "Oh, I'm just going to vote for Joe Biden because he's been doing such a good job."
Right,
it's not realistic.
Yeah,
and the only way that he's going to continue to survive is if he gets the media and the corporations that are, and the big donors are so afraid of Trump and so afraid of the Republican parties taking this, you know, taking away their power and influence, that they will, you know, that they'll throw so much money into it and continue to cheat the system.
Yeah.
Now, here's what I'm worried about, Al, more than anything else. When leaders are in dire straits, and this is throughout history, when they look very bad in the public, and especially when they're under pressure, guess what they do? They often create a boogeyman. Now, we've got the Russia-Ukraine thing going right now.
Yeah, we do.
But
sure.
But they're very ineffective. The Biden administration has been very ineffective in communicating. They don't have a plan. There's no, you know, as long as it takes is not a plan.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. And then what I fear more than anything else is that they create circumstances that allows China to take Taiwan, and then they get into a war on purpose, which appeases their, you know, constituents and financial opportunities, and absolutely diverts the tension from the American people to a war. And then they feel some sort of comfort because they've got leadership already existing for the war. That's happened in the past, and I don't want to, and it happened in Argentina in the Falklands War. It happened, you know, you could go over and over in history of how many times people have reached out, leaders have created war in order to divert people's attention. And if they allow something to happen in Taiwan, if this administration, which has been absolutely derelict in international responsibilities, they allow something to happen in Taiwan, they get the world into some catastrophic war, and it financially crushes us. And of course, the Chinese take advantage of it, and
sure,
people still
don't
buy because he's in office. You know, nothing would surprise me after COVID. Nothing.
Well, I understand. Let me bring up one thing that you and I have never talked about before. If you go on YouTube right now, I don't have a television set. You know, I will as of Thursday. You know, when the source comes in here and fixes whatever is wrong. So I don't have a TV set, so I can't really watch any of the evening news. I can't really have any of the news stations on during the day as I do normally. But what I do have, which is getting to be incredibly valuable, is YouTube. YouTube is doing a tremendous amount of exposure to people like Buttigieg, people like Merritt, etc., etc. They are making them look not only incompetent, but they're making them look evil. I have been watching these interviews every night. You and I talked about it a little bit last week. We talked about Merrick Garland. I'm amazed that people aren't scared to death of that guy. I'm amazed that people don't realize that Buttigieg is, he's very, very sharp in the sense that he is very quick on his feet. He really knows how to handle interviews. that are clearly attempting to show that he's incompetent. He's doing a great job, but the fact of the matter is, I'm amazed that Joe Biden put him in the position that he put him into, because he doesn't know anything about it.
No, he's a liar. He's an idiot. He's made it. I mean, you're right, though. You're right. He sounds good.
Right.
But, you know, he's got problems.
Yeah, he does.
And here's another one that is very interesting. So the mayor of College Park, Maryland.
Yeah.
One of Pete Buttigieg's buddies, who he's had multiple pictures with, who got, you know, worked in the White House, just got arrested last week for basically pedophilia. And yeah. having I think 56 counts of child porn.
Yeah.
Now this is Pete Buttigieg's, you know, gay Pete Buttigieg married to another guy.
Yeah.
Who just adopted two kids.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Yeah. These are questions I have about, you know, people's capacity when they communicate and they make a, you know, kind of fraud. It's just culturally sensitivity. And morally, I don't have a whole lot of respect for him.
Yeah, no, I don't either.
Nor his buddy.
Yeah, I don't either. Let me say this. I'm getting a little fed up with some of the comments that I'm getting personally. And my attitude certainly was shown on the 70 or 80 comments that I addressed over the weekend on the weekend show. I just really don't like the anger that old friends of mine, people that have been commenting on the show since literally the turn of the century, are, you know, opinions they have about me. Because one thing, I'm not a bad person. I simply do not, I don't slam people because of, for emotional reasons. I slam politicians for what I think is the truth. I believe that your opinions and my opinions do one thing for our listeners. They point our listeners in the direction of looking at both sides of the story, and their comments certainly prove that. Some very, very intelligent comments, Jim.
Yeah, often there are.
Yeah.
I always like the intelligence comments. I don't like the ones that are bitter or... No. You know, I like to have an open mind. And again, it's better to have different ideas and disagree
but come
to some sort of, you know, thought process and yep. respect for other opinions
right.
than it is to silence them and just say they're stupid. I'm going to say something right now because I'm just about ready to make a post on Ebo's comment with Scott Ritter.
Yep.
Scott Ritter is a pedophile, convicted
yep.
pedophile. Yeah, he's got a lot of attention when he was a UN inspector. He talked a lot about, you know, weapons, no weapons in Iraq. Well, look at the 1996 Iraqi declaration of how many weapons of mass destruction they had.
Right.
Scott Ritter was a hardcore kind of chasing the world a weapons inspector.
Right.
And then changed his heart all of a sudden and now somehow continues to speak even after he was convicted in both 2021 and then later again, I think in 2009, 2021 of reaching out to a teenager, and then in 2009 for doing online discussing things with a law enforcement officer who was acting as a 15-year-old
yeah.
who said multiple times they were 15 years old.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I'm not going to debate someone like Scott Ritter. I'm not going to debate people that have closed minds that
right.
it's a waste of time and actually are so skewed that they're unwilling to see, you know, kind of another view.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I understand what the Russian position and what Vladimir Putin's position was. I understand
yes.
it.
So do I.
And there's a certain level of understanding of what was happening in the West.
Yeah.
Pushing towards Ukraine.
Yeah.
That and the European Union, some of the rules and some of the things that they go about that I don't think are wise. And I understand why Putin would push against that. I do not think that the solution was to invade a sovereign neighbor.
No.
And to kill literally hundreds of innocent people, thousands of innocent people.
Right.
And tens of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers
right.
and kill tens of thousands of your own soldiers at the same time.
Right.
So, you know, that's just not, in my view, that's not acceptable. And I don't see where people like Scott Ritter and Durant, and I don't see what their outcome is here. I don't see their purpose. I certainly understand the mistakes and the failures with this administration, the Biden administration, on funding and resourcing this war with no end state, and right. That just doesn't make any sense at all.
Right,
taking
I agree.
Responsibility away from the Europeans. But at the same time, I don't know what's going on with these people that are just continuing to think that that Putin's on the right and is somehow going to win this thing. He's done. He's lost. And I'm definitely not going to debate someone like Scott Ritter or people like that that are very close.
No, I mean, that's fine, Jim. That's your choice. My opinion about Russia right now is, as I understand it, one of the reasons that Putin invaded Ukraine is he did not want the Western influence that would come into Russia to actually occur. He wanted Russia to be isolated from NATO, to be isolated from the West. And I got to tell you, I kind of don't blame him, Jim.
Well, I mean, again, when you make the determination, when you're the senior guy and you're the czar, you're making a determination for 140 million people.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable in my view.
I agree. I agree
that doesn't work to me.
Yeah.
That doesn't work.
No.
And he's made it illegal. It's against the law to criticize this war. He's made it against the law to criticize him. He's put himself in power indefinitely. These are things that, you know, authoritarians do. They're not.
Well, he's very definitely an authoritarian of the highest degree.
And partnering with Iran and China, probably not the best team to be on.
No, best use of his time. We're going to have fun going over the comments that come in on this thing. If the comments that came in on the weekend show are any indication, I think I'm going to be a pretty busy cowboy today addressing those comments. And, you know, thank you for giving some of the comments that you're giving. And I appreciate what a lot of you guys are saying. It's really fun to debate you on the blog. Jimmy, I got nothing else to say. Anything else for you?
No, I think we've gone a long time today. So
it's been a good show. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Thanks, Jim.
You bet.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.